This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. All this month, an effort here in the Chattanooga area is highlighting generosity, offering opportunities for people to be generous in their own way. The I Am Generous campaign is presented by Elliott Davis, one of the co-sponsors along with our own campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Dominique Brandt is Vice President of Community Impact at United Way of Greater Chattanooga. Susan Day is the Director of Annual Fund and Special Events at Hospice of Chattanooga, part of Aleo Health. Dominique, Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Ray.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Tell us more about this I Am Generous campaign.
It is an opportunity for the Association of Fundraising Professionals to respond to the circumstances that we are all experiencing through COVID-19 by being really creative in the pivot we have made to what is traditionally a 400-person luncheon event for National Philanthropy Day at the Convention Center. Since most of us are not wanting to get in a room with that many people right now, we have made this pivot to really support all of the nonprofits in our community that are tremendously impacted by the effects of COVID-19, whether they are frontline agencies that are delivering healthcare services and food and that kind of thing, or there are arts and cultural nonprofits that are tremendously impacted by closing doors and lack of attendance. So the I Am Generous campaign is an opportunity for the Association of Fundraising Professionals to draw attention to the need for generosity and philanthropy across our entire region.
This is such an exciting time for us to be able to bring National Philanthropy Day outside of your typical lunchroom, dining hall to the entire community of Chattanooga.
And for the entire month of November leading up to Giving Tuesday on December 1st.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the really neat things about our being able to have this I Am Generous campaign for the entire month of November versus a day of philanthropy, acknowledgement, and encouragement, it is an entire month. The Association of Fundraising Professionals is not fundraising for themselves. We are fundraising for everyone in our community because nonprofits are serving everyone in our community in one capacity or the other. So the encouragement to be generous, the examples of generosity really are across our entire community.
The needs at this time are great and many. There are so many opportunities to give, but just share a few with us right now.
Some of the things that pop to mind really quickly are food, for example, and so what the Chattanooga Area Food Bank is doing. And then when you think about food, you have to think about United Way's 211, which is a clearinghouse for the food bank getting out all their food boxes. We know with COVID, so many have lost loved ones, so many have become ill. It has become very difficult sometimes to visit those that are ill. And so then you stop and think about organizations such as hospice that are providing this really crucial support and service at a time that is such a fragile time in everyone's life. Then you're thinking about Metropolitan Ministries that is on front lines and helping to pay people's electric bills and other basic needs. Agencies such as La Paz and SEMPA that are providing free COVID testing. I could just keep going on and on. And at some point, we know we will get beyond this. We don't know when that is, but we know. And then we're really going to hope that our Chattanooga Symphony and Opera is there, that our museums like the Hunter are open, that other arts organizations and cultural organizations like the Bessie Smith are able to continue their work. Those are things that we may not have front of mind at the moment, but very quickly when we come on the other side of this, we're going to realize how much we've lost and how much we really are desperately wanting to have that enrichment back in our lives. Just think of it as the full spectrum of our human experience.
And there are also people who have been affected financially because they have lost their jobs.
Absolutely. And so some of the things that come to mind are the Community Foundation has had a response and resilience fund that they stood up very quickly after all of this occurred, and they have been providing support to numerous nonprofits that are on the front line. To that same end, United Way launched the Restore Hope Fund the week after the shutdown and have been providing support to individual households with rent assistance, utilities, car payments, car insurance, everything that is needed for families to continue in the face of lost wages and lost jobs. And those are just a couple of examples. Again, there are so many frontline agencies in Chattanooga really providing support to these families that are struggling right now.
And as we head into the winter and as we head into the beginning of next year, there will be more needs, there will be more opportunities. And we should remind folks that if they are able to give, whatever amount they can give, they should give.
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah, this is so much about all of our nonprofits across the community, which is kind of neat because you don't often see a nonprofit raising money for everybody. But that's exactly what the Association of Fundraising Professionals does, because we are a nonprofit that is made up of the fundraising professionals across our community. So everyone from CSO to hospice to United Way to Habitat to MetMin, every single nonprofit is represented there. It's an organization that allows us to learn more as professionals in the philanthropic arena, how to do our work more ethically, how to do our work better, how to be even better stewards of our donors' dollars, and providing more support to the community. So when we look at coming into year end, as you mentioned, so many families have lost jobs or have lost wages. And that means that the end of the year holidays might look a little bit different. There is a lot of need, whether you are donating to the Forgotten Child Fund for toys for children, or again, you're donating to a frontline agency that is going to help a family pay their heating bill throughout the cold months. The need is extensive. Whatever it is that is touching your heart, that's what we want to say. The Association of Fundraising Professionals is saying, be generous, be philanthropic, understand the value of that. And we're not advocating one organization or the other. They all need our support during these days.
If people want more information, and if people want to be steered to the different groups that they can give under this campaign, where can they go online?
I would recommend that they go on to either CHA Gives. CHA Gives has been working with several nonprofits locally, and they are part of Giving Tuesday. They can also go on to our website, AFP, Southeast Tennessee, and they can also go on to the Chattanooga Nonprofit Alliance.
All right. Susan, Dominique, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray. Really appreciate your having us on.
Thank you.
The holidays are a time when we can especially feel the loss of someone dear to us. Susan Latta is director of the grief program at Hospice of Chattanooga. Tomorrow, starting at 5:30 p.m., she will appear online, partnering with the Chattery and Welcome Home of Chattanooga for an event titled Hope for the Holidays. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This is a difficult topic at any time, but especially during a year such as this one.
Yeah, this has been such a different year for so many people. And when you have not only the COVID and all the isolation that's happening and then have a significant death occur, it has been making grief much more complicated than if people were able to do what they would typically have done prior to COVID-19, especially around funerals and memorials and celebrations of life, and then just being with people. Holidays generally can be very difficult for people, especially if they're going through it the first year, but even after the second year, third year, fourth year, because holidays often have a lot of symbolism, whether it is traditions that you always cook turkey with your mom. I can remember my sister's husband died very suddenly. He was the one that always cut the turkey. And so on Thanksgiving morning, I got a call from her and she was just sobbing and saying, "Who's going to cut the turkey? Tim isn't here to do that." And that was such a symbol of who he was, one of his roles in the family. And so we talked about various people that could now take over that job of cutting the turkey. That was her first Thanksgiving without Tim. Part of the biggest challenge is trying to figure out what you need. And many people don't even want to do holidays. And so what I will often say to people is have a plan A, have a plan B, and have a plan C. Plan A is I'm going to go and I'm going to do holidays like we always did. And you start doing it that day and think, what in the world was I thinking? How can I even do that? So plan B may be, yes, I got all the stuff to do to make a turkey, or I was going to go to someone's house and have turkey, and I just can't do it. So I might have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at home. But to have different ideas of some options that you can do for yourself on those very hard days, whether it's Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa or just a day, an anniversary. I talked with someone just earlier this morning who it would have been her 50th anniversary with her husband yesterday. We had talked in the previous time that I had spoken with her some things that she might do. And so she went to the cemetery and she put flowers at his grave. And one of the things that was hard was that people didn't recognize that that was going to be a hard day for her. She recognized it. Several people did recognize it, but she shared that she felt like she was having a pity party because not everybody knew that that would have been their 50th anniversary. Grief can be very lonely. And during this time, especially with the pandemic, it has really increased a lot of sense of isolation. And especially for people that have had a spouse die or someone that lives in the house with them die, and now they're not there, that aloneness is just like intensified.
What tips do you have that pertain to how people can cope during this time?
One would be get your fears out about it. Talk about it. Acknowledge, you know what? I really am not sure I even want to do Thanksgiving or Christmas. Okay, that's fine. There's no rule that says you have to. Plan ahead. Be able to figure out what it is that you think you can do. And share that with whoever you might be doing that with, your family, your friends, your church group, or whoever that may be. This is what I would like to try to do. Look at the holidays as a series of small events. Do not start with Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Don't go the whole gamut. I'm going to take it one day at a time. I'm going to take it one holiday at a time, or one red light day that, I mean, it may be every day from here into the end of the year. Take care of yourself. That's a huge piece. Make sure that you're doing things, you're getting your sleep, you're eating well, you're trying to get some exercise, you're reaching out, even though you may feel like isolating. See if you can make a connection with somebody every day. Keep your celebrations simple. So some people won't even put up a tree. I've had many people that have gone to like Sam's or Costco and they have those trees that you just take out of the box and all the lights are on. That has worked well for a lot of people. So they don't have to get it out and they don't have to have all those memories of the last time we put up this Christmas tree, XYZ person was there. So find some creative ways that you can, if you want a Christmas tree or if you want whatever, do it. The other thing that's really important is if you have kids, because kids often get forgotten in all this, especially around the holidays, is ask them what they would like to do. So let's say you have some middle school or grade school kids, and it's your first Thanksgiving without a dad or a mom. Ask the kids, how do you want to do Thanksgiving this year? How do you want to remember dad? Or how do you want to remember mom? Do you want to remember mom? Do you want to remember dad or grandpa or meemaw or whoever that may be? Some kids will actually take like a placemat and decorate it and put it on the table, whether you put a serving dish on top of it or use that as a kind of a centerpiece for the table as an acknowledgement that XYZ person is not here. Kids can be really creative with how they want to do the holidays. And please remember to include them because they have needs as well. I have one family that made a chain out of paper. They cut it up into strips of paper. And on Thanksgiving Day, they asked people that came for Thanksgiving to write a memory about this person. And then the grandkids helped this widow make this paper chain that went all around the Christmas tree. And she had them sign their name and put a date to it. And every year now, they use that as the Christmas with all these beautiful memories of this precious gentleman that died. Doing something creative like that can be helpful. Some people totally mix up their holidays. I had one family whose young daughter died, and they just said, we can't do Christmas this year. So they went on a ski trip and went on a ski trip the second year because it just was too hard to be home during those holidays, missing their daughter. I had one family that Thanksgiving was their dad's husband's favorite holiday. And so the wife, I was working with her and she said, you know, I can't do that this year. And I said, so what are your thoughts? And she said, he loved the community kitchen. And so their two kids were like, I don't know, at the time he died, were like 18 and 20 or something like that. And so the three of them decided to volunteer on Thanksgiving Day in honor of their dad and husband and serve a meal to the homeless on Thanksgiving Day. And then they were going to do Thanksgiving that Friday or Saturday of that weekend. And so just finding different ways that you can connect, take care of yourself, and be able to include your kids or other family members in the planning if that works for you.
And for more information on this online course, people can go to thechattery.org. Beyond that, where can they go online to follow what you do and what the hospice does?
They can go to hospiceofchattanooga.org, and there's all sorts of information about our support groups. And then also Welcome Home is co-sponsoring this with Hospice of Chattanooga. So they can also go on Welcome Home's website as well.
All right. Susan, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray. Take care.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
On Scenic Roots, this is Talking Writing. Our guest is singer and songwriter Jason Lyles. He has a new album called Chameleona.
Breaking out or breaking in, either way, there's no way to win. There's no way to facilitate our own idea of escape, so we climb. We'll end up in the other time. Somewhere there's a path to see. Waking up from the apathy, we take on the fight. Watch the fuse ignite. When you know it's right, you hesitate to stop the hate tonight. Here we are to take a stand, together marching hand in hand. Raise them up across the land, till we turn the stone in the sand and we'll fly. Feathers up into the sky, find a way to make it less, soaring high beyond the past. We take on the fight, watch the fuse ignite. When you know it's right, time to elevate a brand new paradigm. Till we roll on the same side, with arms open wide, the polarity of humanity has died. take on the fight. Watch the fuse ignite. When you know it's right, you hesitate to stop the hate now. We take on the fight. Watch the fuse ignite. We won't be polite. Time to elevate a brand new paradigm.
Jason Lyles is our guest. I guess it's at this point it's a commonplace to say that we've all been impacted by the virus. But truth is, it's in some ways as individual as anything else in life. And in Jason's case, you've been doubly impacted. You're teaching middle school? Is that what you
high
teach?
High school.
Oh, you teach high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, is a case all by itself.
Exactly.
how to cope with students on from so many different points of view, from protecting yourself, protecting them, helping them cope with the stress of all this, which must be really difficult for them, I would think.
It is. And, you know, there's been a lot of stress, and you can tell that the population of kids at the school, you can tell that they feel different. You know, just the mood is different in the school than it has been in years past. And of course, the school population is kind of a microcosm of the population at large. And so you have all kinds of different viewpoints about this. You know, some people are very stressed out about it, and some people who think they don't really need to wear a mask or anything. It's just, you know, it just runs the gamut.
Well, I guess they tend to reflect their parents' view of things in a lot of cases, right?
Probably for the most part, yeah.
So there's that side of your life.
There is that part.
And more than one friend of mine who is a creative in one way or another has talked about this being the way to cope with it, to make music or to paint or whatever creative endeavor they're engaged in. Is that true for you? Is it therapeutic for you to make music after a day spent with freaked out high school kids?
Yeah, it is. It's fun to, of course, to create and to express yourself through music. And, you know, there's actually one of the songs on the album I wrote during this pandemic, and it helped me deal with something I was going through. And it's also great to just perform music. You know, performing music is such an outlet. So when I go and I entertain a crowd instead of try to make sure that they learn something, it is much more stress-free and enjoyable an experience after teaching. I have a system. I mean, I have a songbook in front of me that has a list of all my songs, and it's basically just to help me remember what all songs I know. But then I have a lot of the songs organized by decade and that kind of thing. And so I look around at the ages of the people in there, and I do about five or six kind of test songs that are a variety of different...
To see what you're getting a response
to. Yeah, see what I get a response to. And then, like, if I play, say, like, a 1980s song and everybody's into it, well, I'm just going to go into the next 1980s song and keep it going, you know? Of course, I work in all my originals.
So you must have quite a catalog of covers, then.
I do. I've got a lot of stuff in my book.
How many songs do you know?
How many?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know.
How do you remember them all?
Well, I don't know. I just do. Some of them I've been playing a long time. And some of them I have my cheat sheet in front of me that I have varying degrees of how much I need it. Sometimes it's there for a safety net. And sometimes if it's something I don't play a lot, I just kind of have to read off of it a little bit. But, you know, sometimes if somebody wants something and it's a song that I'm halfway familiar with, I'll pull it up on my phone and try to do something for them. Especially if they have money in their hand, I'll work something out.
Give us a cover. What are your favorite covers to play? Do you have art acts that you tend to gravitate toward?
Well, you know, I play a lot of stuff that I was influenced by growing up. A lot of stuff from the 90s, sort of acoustic-y pop and alternative type stuff. And, you know, some of the stuff that I listened to in the 80s when I was real little. My mom had a huge vinyl collection, and she still does. She's still got it somewhere. And, you know, 12-inch and 45s, and we would listen to that stuff together. We had a big record player in the living room, and she would put the speakers and turn around in the windows. And so they'd go out the windows to the front porch, and in the front porch we had a swing, and so we would sit there and swing together and listen to all these vinyl records when I was a kid. And I think that's pretty much what got me into pop music and performing it.
You didn't need a radio.
No, I didn't. I didn't. This is probably one of my favorite covers that I've been doing probably for a long time. It's by a band called Tonic from the 90s. The singer and the writer, Emerson Hart, he lives in Franklin, Tennessee now, but he's a great writer. But this song is called If You Could Only See.
If you could only see the way she loves me, maybe you would understand why I feel this way about her love, what I must know. If you could only see how blue her eyes can be when she says, when she says she loves me. Got your reasons, and you got your lies, and you got your manipulations coming down to size. Say you love the guilt of giving love to you. If you could only see the way she loves me, maybe you'd understand why I feel this way about my love, what I must do. If you could only see how blue her eyes can be when she says she loves me. Soon's happiness unravel, and you got to take a little dip to keep on to love. It's what you're gonna do now. Say love, you love, give me love too. Stretching out your arms, something's just not there. Say love, will you stand? Give me high when you can. If you could only see the way she loves me, maybe you'd understand why I feel this way about our love, what I must do. If you could only see how blue her eyes can be when she says she loves me.
Jason Lyles is our guest this afternoon. He has a new album that has just been released. Listening to you cover that song, it struck me that you're as much attracted to the voice as you are to the instruments in mm-hmm. the band. Is that true?
Yeah, I was a singer long before I was a guitar player.
While you were singing that, I had the sense that you were channeling the singer. Channeling his phrasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course, when I listened to stuff as a kid with my mom, I didn't have a guitar. I didn't have access to a guitar. We had an old piano from the early 1900s that was mostly out of tune all the time. But and I played with that a little bit. But you know, mostly I would sing and imitate styles and of stuff that I liked. And you know,
so from early on, you figured that's something you wanted to do. You weren't just a listener. You wanted to be somebody who actually made the music.
Right, right. I did. And then when I got into, I guess, high school, and there was a choral arts program available, and, you know, I learned to sing different techniques. I learned to sing, you know, to be classically trained as a singer and sing, you know, as a tenor part in a choir and to sing as a solo and in a small quartets and ensembles. And so that just kind of like, you know, in the same way that, like, you know, a guitar player can play electric or acoustic or something like that, I felt like that was like another tool in my tool belt, you know, to really express myself through music. And of course, you know, one of my favorite things to do when I record now is the overdub background vocals. It's so fun to just like be, you know, make your own choir of music. It's fun.
On Scenic Roots, this is Talking Writing. Our guest is Jason Lyles. Jason has a new album called Chameleona. From it, this is Nothing Left For Me. So you enjoyed the process of making this record? For some people, you know, being in a studio and trying to capture the sound that they hear in their head or the sound that they can make when they're on stage in front of an audience is a bit of a challenge. And
yeah, well, this was, it's interesting because the way this album comes out, it came about, I started recording it in January. And the original plan, of
good
course,
timing.
The original, the original plan, of course, was to release it in May and then, you know, do a summer tour and go.
Oh, sorry, Jason, that's so smart to do it that way. You were off from school by May and
you
had the whole summer.
That's the way I did it last year. You know, I put out my last album last spring, and then I traveled around, you know, during the summer, went to North Carolina, spent a lot of time there, a little bit in South Carolina, went to California for a couple of nights and did some stuff out there. And it was great, you know, and part of writing this new album was when I was out there on the road and you know, traveling through the North Carolina mountains and stuff. And that's when things would come to me and I'd record something on my phone. And then when it got time, you know, when 2020 came around, I was ready to record. And I just happened to run into William Bowers, who recorded us last summer.
He was the engineer.
He was the engineer for our Live in the Library. And he is big into producing now. And so I asked him to produce this record with me. And so he did a lot of the sound design and electronic beats and things for this album, and he's the studio manager at Breaker 17 Studio, and so that's where we did this album. It was a great process working with him because we got started, and he's so good at like listening to me describe some kind of thing that I want and not being able to like manifest the sound, and he says, oh, I know what you want. And so he'll pull up something on a Spotify playlist and say it's similar to this, and then he'll start working in Ableton and make it. And so he's really good at like pulling my ideas out and making them a reality, and it's really great.
How did you communicate those ideas? Did you sing them to him?
Well, for a lot of them, it was more of a mood or a vibe, or with the beats, I wanted to like have a certain sound for a kick or a snare hit or something like that that was different. And I would give him some rhythms and he would put them in there. It was a really cool creative process. And then once the pandemic started, we did a few sessions over, I forget what the name of it is, but it was kind of like Zoom, but it's something that gamers use, some kind of like thing that people use for gaming
So were you able to see each other as well as hear each other?
We didn't see each other. We heard each other, and we saw what was going on Ableton in the computer program. And so I could see him changing things on the screen and then playing it back for me, and I could hear it in my headphones. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's it, that's it. So it was cool. You know, we did part of it remotely. It was so weird. And then, of course, you know, I guess it was around in May or June, they started lifting some of the restrictions. And so they opened the studio back up, and then during the summer, we finished up everything else. And
well, let's listen to something from the record. What would you like to for me to play? Tell us something about it in terms of what you've just been talking about, the whole process of making it.
Well, we'll play Expand. That's a good one, because all the beats in that are from Will, and the sound design is from Will. And for this album, I really wanted to, this was kind of an Anything Goes album. You know, my last album, I had kind of a format of acoustic music I wanted to do, but this one I wanted to be whatever. And so wherever creatively we went, that's where we went. And so Expand is one that really demonstrates that. It's got the electronic beats. It's all still based around acoustic guitar, you know, this, that little riff right there. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like this acoustic hippie 60s vibe. And then the beats come in with this weird sound design, and all of a sudden you're like in the year 3000. So it's like it's a combination of, like, you know, organic hippie versus futuristic stuff. So it's kind of freaky, and I got to do some choir parts on it too, and it was just a really enjoyable experience.
This is our guest, Jason Lyles.
Chains and we're milking honeybees.
is Talking Writing. Our guest is singer and songwriter Jason Lyles. His new album just released is called Chameleona. He has a number of gigs upcoming, including a performance at Yellow Racket Records to celebrate the release of the album on vinyl. His first gig is this Saturday, November 14th, on Saturday afternoon from 1 until 4 at Charlie's Barbecue and Bakery on East Main Street. The following Saturday, November 21st, he'll be playing in the Gate 11 Distillery at the Choo Choo, starting at 7:30. On Saturday, December 5th, he'll be in Yellow Racket Records all afternoon, dining at 1 o'clock, to celebrate the release of the album on vinyl, and then later that day, he'll be in Wanderlinger Brewery for a show starting at 8:30. From the new album, this is a song called 23. Scenic Roots, Jason Lyles from his new album just released called Chameleona, that song called 23. Details on upcoming gigs, and you can also find the album on his website, Jason Lyles Music, L-Y-L-E-S, jasonlylesmusic.com. This is Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.